Hey everybody, Shane here with the Rock Paper Podcast. This week's episode is sponsored by Allison Barth Agency with Farmers Insurance. She works with all lines of insurance, whether it's home, auto, life, or business. Give her a call at 636-288-4672. She'll get you a quote. It's fast, easy, and painless. See what she can save you some money and make sure you're properly insured. Again, it's 288-4672. Allison Barth Agency with Farmers Insurance.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with the Rock Paper Podcast. This is episode 19.
Oh, shit, I thought I was getting 18.
No.
Man, I was so excited to get 18.
Sorry.
19's not a good
number. I'm sorry. We can pretend.
We can just put this off till 118.
All right. Take two. Yeah. Sitting here hanging out with my friend, Frankie Chubb. And what's up, Frankie?
Hey, Shane, how are you?
Doing wonderful, my friend.
Very good.
So we were just chatting it up a little bit before Mike went on about comedy.
Yes.
Frankie himself is a stand-up comic here in St. Louis.
Not very good, though.
So what? Who got you into comedy? Like, what? Who'd you see that was like, man, I want to do that?
You know, I can't specifically think of an individual who got me into stand-up comedy. Yeah. But what I can tell you is a specific pinpoint moment where comedy entered into my life. At least the earliest memory I have where comedy was comedy, and it really affected me. I was a young kid, young, I don't even remember how old I was, but I was young, and it was Thanksgiving, and all my cousins and my grandparents and my whole family, big Italian family all together, two of my older cousins were downstairs watching Airplane, and I sat down and I started watching it with them, and it was the most amazing thing I had ever seen, because I had never seen anything like that. And the jokes are so accessible to anybody, and they're so timeless. I mean, it's an old movie, but that was the hardest I've ever laughed. And I had to leave for the boob part, because they knew boobs were coming up, and they're like, you gotta leave for the boobs. And I was like, well, now I definitely have to see this on my own time. Yeah. I have to get, because I gotta see the boobs in Airplane. Right. So not only was it a religious experience, because it was hilarious, there were boobs, and it was PG. Oh, but seeing Airplane for the first time, that was a big moment.
Yeah, man, that movie is so iconic and holds up, like, just so many great lines, like you said. Like,
it's perfect.
Yeah, and it's very, like, dry, you know, like, there's, you know, moments, it's not the big punchline. There's so many lines that they just, like, squeeze in there, and, like, you go back and you watch it later, and you just catch something that you might have missed before, and it's just, like, it makes you laugh so hard. And
it's almost every line of dialogue.
Yeah.
Almost every line of dialogue has something behind it that will make you laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And then the visual gags. I mean, it's like it created a genre of comedy films with the laugh every minute type thing, which they don't do so great anymore.
Yeah.
But
comedy movies for sure have, like, definitely gone away from that. Like, there's not like, I mean, I'm a big Mel Brooks fan, so
I,
like,
love it. Oh my god.
So, like, Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles, like, just so many classic, you know, lines of right up repeating after one after another, and just, and, you know, that it's hard to find that kind of caliber of comedy, and especially a movie that holds up now 40 years or what, you know,
it's, but it still holds up.
Yeah, right.
Young Frankenstein is still as funny
to
any generation of people, because those jokes are timeless.
Right.
And it's a beautiful
thing. Yeah. Mel Brooks was just on Conan the other night, and he got his handprint in the Chinese theater, and he did, like, put a sixth finger on
his... a sixth finger on his hand. And it's such a simple thing, but that's so hilarious. Oh, right.
Yeah, so everybody's going to walk by.
And... like, they count him and they're like, what the... Did he have six fingers?
Yeah, that's
the aliens are going to think this comedic genius had six fingers, and that's the key to comedy filmmaking, is the sixth finger. That's what it is. It's all in the sixth finger.
Yeah, man, I... Some of the other good ones? I'm drawing blank. But I remember getting introduced to that same thing when I was quite young, probably too young. But, like, seeing these movies and just...
It changes you,
so,
man.
Yeah, they're so funny.
And again, the Naked Guns, all of the Guns. Yeah. I mean, it spawned me into that whole Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah. He's good, man. Drawing blanks now. Anyway, for what... Some other good classic comedies like that. I also, like... I don't know. Even, it's a different, but I still love, like, some of the movies that, like, Dirty Work for me is
a good... Oh, Dirty Work was a classic.
Is another where, like, so many great lines. It's not, like, that caliber, but it's still... Norm Macdonald, to me, is...
That movie's great.
Yeah.
And not a lot of... I mean, it's really not recognized so often as one of the great comedic films, but I had a VHS of that.
Oh, yeah.
And anytime I were just doing any mindless activity, like playing it, I'd always have that in the background.
I remember Artie Lang had a bit where he, like... I think he actually did on his, like, one of his specials, but somebody brought up a copy of Dirty Work, and he, like, gave him $10 for it, like, because he's like, oh, I'm sorry you bought that, or something. You know, that was, like, kind of a joke. Even though it's, like...
the refund.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, but, I mean, yeah, like, even though a movie is not a huge... blockbuster or whatever, made a lot of money.
It can still mean a lot to people.
It's still so funny, though.
Yeah. It's weird how, you know, I was watching this Michael Moore documentary, and it had, I'm going to sound like an idiot here. Is it Wallace Shawn from Princess Bride? Is that his name? The little guy? Inconceivable!
Yeah. Man, I don't know.
If that's not his name, I sound like, you edit in so I sound smart. Sure. All right? Know. Just change my voice
we've
to make it.
Power.
Whatever you do, make me sound good for name dropping. Not like I know him. But I was watching this movie, this Michael Moore documentary, and he was in there, and they were walking around just shopping. And I think, how many times a day, even though it wasn't a small film, do people go up to him and they're like, oh, I love The Princess Bride. Like, you're in one movie, and for the rest of your life, anytime you go to the deli, oh, man, I love that movie you're in. And that just sticks with you. That's how, I mean, movies impact people on such a profound level. In a way that books will never match. And in a way that there's nobody going around looking for Dean Koontz. Nobody. The guy who's in Princess Bride, you're going to... He means something.
I think there's something like that, too. Like, the band Extreme.
Yeah.
Like, they had that big hit with... now I'm drawing the name. Man, I can't think tonight.
We'll edit more this than, so more, we know all of our name drops again.
More Than Words. But they like wrote this and it became a huge hit, but like they didn't want to be like known for that song, and like so they hated when people like everybody wanted to hear
they did more that asshole thing. Yeah. Like, we got more than that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's the same thing like with the movie, like that, you know, everybody wants to know him for that one movie, and he's like, well, he's
sure I've done other stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know, you got other crap, but we really like
just say that line, man. Just
do the thing we want you to do. It's like when Zeppelin wouldn't play Stairway. We got other songs. We like that one.
Just do that one, man.
That's a pretentious art asshole thing to do. If I ever have a joke that people love more than any other joke, I will do a tour where that's the only joke I tell. I'll give it to them until I run it into the ground.
My buddy told me a story about years ago. He saw Deep Blue Something, who does that...
Are you drawing a blank, or is that their name?
No, that's their name. That's... they do the Breakfast at Tiffany's song.
Yeah. And, oh, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that was, like, the one-hit wonder thing. Yeah. And they, apparently, they played the show, and, like, they knew everybody was there for that one song, and, like, they played it, and they're like, okay, there's the song. You guys can leave if you want. And, like, apparently, like, everybody just cleared out. Like, so they showed up, and they, like, heard their one song they wanted to hear, and they're like, all right, we're out of here. Let's go. And
you
like,
got to save that shit for the end.
Yeah, right. Well,
you got to give them a reason to stay.
But that's the thing. Like, they were, you know, they knew that people were there for that song. So they were like, okay, if you only came here to hear that song, there you go. Get out of here now. Like, we want people to enjoy the rest of the show that actually are here to us or whatever.
Like Miles Davis. He wants the real fans to be in the crowd.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't want to play for these hacks who just come out to see him. He wants to get the real raw eight people who came who give a shit.
Yeah, so, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like you, man. It's like, if you had something that people want and they're paying for it, give the people what they want.
Unless you really are an artist.
Yeah.
And most of these people, it's not like the Proclaimers were artists. You want to go see them play I Would Walk 500 Miles, but you're going to play the other crap first. And that way you can charge them for a whole show. You can charge the ticket price for a whole show.
I remember one time, I think he did it like perfectly. I saw Tom Petty, and guy's got just a, you know, huge catalog of hits, and like so he's just playing and you know, just hit after hit, and then he's like, okay, we're gonna play some new songs, and like you watch the crowd all get up, go to the bathroom and get a beer and come back, and then he closes on with the, you know,
they know, like, they know.
Yeah,
they
it's
know.
Like, we'll go ahead and let you guys take a break to
get, you gotta go, you know, pee.
Yeah.
All right, go refill those beers. We'll be back in a minute with the shit you came to see.
Yeah, right. So
I forget who the comedian was. I think it might have been David Spade who had a joke. Anytime a band says, here's our new crap, it's the bathroom break.
Yeah,
it
right.
Is. It's just the way it is. I don't think I've ever, and I love music, and I love seeing live shows. But no matter how fanatical the fan base is, I don't think I've ever seen any show where they start playing their new stuff and anyone shows any enthusiasm.
Yeah.
I mean, even for like...
I think for me, it's like a lot of it comes because, let alone familiar, you know, being familiar with it, but like sometimes it takes a moment to gain like an emotional attachment to these songs.
Yeah.
You know, so like, if it's a new song, you haven't, you know, been, you haven't got that yet. And it's like, sometimes it takes that. So like,
right,
you know, the songs that people know and they've heard over and over.
There's already a connection.
Yeah. So they've got this connection. They want that. They want that, you know, so I know like those new songs, you know, maybe in a couple of years we'll have that connection. But right now.
It's going to take time for them to become classics.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And all, by the way, on top of that, it is also crap every time. Well, I don't care who the band is; it's also shit.
Yeah. So you touched on your live shows. You like? I know I see you a lot at these fish shows.
I have a problem.
Yeah,
I have a problem, as my mother puts it. Just like there's meetings.
Yeah,
like you can go and you're like, "Hi, my name is Frankie. I've seen fish 31 times."
Is that accurate?
Well, yeah.
31.
Yeah. And it's, and can I just say this? Anytime I go to these shows, and I have friends, it's like you go through life and it's like I have work friends.
Yeah.
I have high school friends. I have, you know, whatever, groups of friends. I have fish friends.
Yeah.
And anytime you tell a fish friend, oh, I've been to 31 shows, like, fish patch, 78, 141. You meet guys who've seen 500 shows, and it's like what they did with their life.
Yeah.
Because what they do, which I could never, even if we had 8 hours, I couldn't begin to explain to you what it is that people connect with that makes them so fanatical about this group. Which if I had to give it quick, it's the fact that they improvise. They don't just like improvise, like they go for it. Or at least they used to. They're not so much anymore. But the reason people go through such great lengths and see so many shows is because they might play the perfect fish show. I mean, anytime you see fish, it's going to be a different set list. It's going to be different arrangements on each song. It's a totally different experience. And you're hoping you're at the one where they do the thing that you want to see. They have, you know, 300 original songs. And you never know what you're going to get. Sometimes they unshelf a song that they haven't played in, you know, 500 shows or... I was in Denver just this last Labor Day weekend, and they played a song called In a Hole, which is a stupid, dumb song. And the whole joke is that he goes, I'm in a hole, I'm in a hole, I'm an a-hole. And that's it. It's the dumbest, and it makes people, you know, who have no idea what fish are, they go, you pay money to see this garbage. But here's why that is a beautiful experience, because they haven't played that since 1989. I was at the show where they unshelved that from 1989, and you count up the shows in between, then you go, that was a 1,500 show gap from when they played it, and you have stats.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are baseball fanatics are fish fanatics because of the stats.
Sure.
I mean, you go to a show and you're like, oh, they haven't played this in 873 shows, and this song clocked in at 16 and 83 minutes. The level of obsession is infinitely deep, and they record all of their shows. You can download all of their live shows. and you can listen to them if you want.
Yeah.
But most people, like myself, like, I'll just download them all. I'll listen to half of them. But just to know in my heart, I got them. Like, I have, on these hard drives, I have every show. And I can listen. Yeah. I never will.
Yeah.
But I got them. There's definitely people who have obsessive traits definitely tend to gravitate towards this type of thing.
Yeah.
But it's the improvisation, man. You want to go and you want to see them try new things. And it's cool because it's like with comedians. You see a comedian go off the cuff, it's more exciting.
Sure.
You can always tell when they're riffing and when they're just going off the cuff, the audience is zoned in and they're like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
It's just like with the band. Once you can tell that they're in improvisation mode and they're just making it up, you're like, this could go anywhere. There's excitement. And sometimes it falls flat, but then other times it works out. Like, out of the 31 times I've seen Fish, 3 of those were good shows. Those were good shows. It worked out. You might be thinking, oh, these are terrible odds. Well, I also have a gambling problem. Like, that's... 3 of these were good shows. But yeah, it gives you something to do. Yeah. I mean, you know, we got to fill our lives with something.
Yeah. I mean, like, exactly what you were saying about the friends. Like, I'm the same way. Like, I go to a ton of shows, and I've met people at these shows that I've become more friendly with than my, you know, other friends, because like, I'm seeing them at the same shows over and over, and like, you know, you develop these friendships, and but you can count on seeing them, like, oh, I'm gonna go there, I'm gonna see them tonight, and it's like, and you look forward to that. But it's like, and for me, like, I'm spread all over.
You do go out a lot, man. I see you on Facebook. You're always at every live show. You do it.
So that makes me wonder, like, see, if I don't know, there's no way I could, like, devote to one, because I enjoy so much. So it's like, you think, how much, do you ever feel like you're missing out on others?
I don't know, you know? Dude, because I've gone out. I've done it. I've dabbled. There are other jam bands.
Yeah. Like Dave Matthews, like, I know that's a big...
I don't care.
Yeah. I know that's a big one for a lot of people. They travel all over seeing Dave. Like,
I have friends who are Dave people.
Yeah.
They're not really friends. But I know people who like Dave. That's not true. I did meet one girl at a Fish show in Chicago, and she's very cool.
Is it kind of like, you know, split? Like, it's like Chicago with the White Sox and the Cubs? Like, you know, either one of the
Dave fans and Fish fans don't get along.
Yeah.
And I think it's very similar to what happens with dogs and cats.
Yeah.
It's just two different things.
Yeah.
And they're not meant to be together. Because at some point, in conversation, you go, oh, you know who really scratches my itch? Trey Anastasio.
Yeah.
Like, you know who scratches my itch? Dave Matthews. They're like, really? Are you a fucking idiot? Have you heard his fucking garbage?
Yeah.
But no, the reason I go to Fish is I think the well of what you can dive into. Other bands have it. Other bands improvise. But theirs, in my opinion, in my humble and right opinion, is deeper. I mean, the musical styles that they play, I mean, it's way bigger. They do things that no other band does.
Yeah.
One thing that I love about them is that on Halloween, they will play a set of their music, an 80-minute set of their music. They'll take a 20-minute break, and then they'll cover someone else's album in its entirety, take a break, and then they'll play another set of their music. It's like a 7-hour affair, and you get to see your favorite band cover, like, they've done the Beatles, they've done the Rolling Stones, they've done the Talking Heads, they did the Velvet Underground, they've done Little Feat, they've done The Who. I mean, and it's a really cool thing. I'm going to go to Vegas this Halloween to go see them do that.
Nice.
And the rumor is that they're done with that tradition and they're not going to cover albums. And if they don't, I'll be very upset. And it will affect our relationship. I don't know that we're going to break up, but we're not going to be as close as we used to be.
Yeah.
It'll be a rift between us.
So if you were to pick the band that they would do, who would you want them to hear? Who would you want to hear?
I mean, in my fantasy, it would be Yes.
Yeah.
Because they are proficient enough musicians to pull off Yes. And Yes is insane. I love Yes. Yes has been one of my favorite bands for many years. I got into Yes when I was young, and I just learned, I just started to take guitar lessons, and my guitar teacher really turned me on to some insane guitarists, and Yes was one of them. And I'm not a great guitar player, but I can hear when somebody else is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those guys are, and every musician in that band. It's not just good guitar. Mm-hmm. Yes is a phenomenal band. And to see Phish cover Yes would be great. Now, it'd be nice to see them do the Dead, not necessarily because I'm a big Deadhead, but because the fan base, it would collect, it would be the worst smelling show. Not that Phish should smell good in the first place. They're horrendous affairs. But everybody would shit their pants at once. If Phish started playing the Dead, if Phish played American Beauty, then everybody would shit their pants and everybody would go, that was the Halloween to be at. And it'd be nice to be at that one. I've never been at a Phish Halloween. I've done a Phish New Year's Eve, but I've never done a Halloween. So I'm very excited to be lucky enough to be going this year. And it's not hard to go to a Phish show. Every ticket is $60. Every seat is $60. You know, they're good dudes. They get Ticketmaster out of the equation, and they just charge a flat rate because, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you have just as much right to see a show in the front row as in the back.
Right.
But unfortunately, scalpers have caught on to this, and so what they'll do is they'll buy the tickets. And like, Phish show Halloween, the Halloween show this year sold out in less than 10 minutes. And then 15 minutes later, you go on eBay, and it's like, you want to see Phish Halloween? You got $390. Yeah. Yeah. It's awful.
That's sort of, I mean, it's totally different, but I like that, like, at Point Fest, like, it's always, like, $29, $29, what do you know, it's like, it's all flat rate for everybody.
And you know what, if you're a diehard, you get in the front row.
You get them early, and you get right up front, and you can, and...
That's the best.
Yeah, so...
And they, that's another reason, I mean, I like I said, and I told you this earlier, I could go on about these guys, we should just do a Phish podcast from now on.
Yeah.
And then we could have 180 episodes and just pontificate on their greatness. But they go out of their way so hard to make sure the fans are having a good time.
Yeah.
They even have, like, the security guards at shows, they have to go through a training program to learn how to deal with Phish fans. Mm. And, It's just the most relaxed experience. And out of all the years I've been seeing Phish, I take a lot of people. It's like if you have a Christian friend who tries to take you to church, and they're like, dude, you gotta try out this God shit. It's great. It'll make you feel real good, and you can forget all your worries and heaven and all that bullshit. I do the same thing with Phish. I go, dude, you gotta hear this Phish shit. It'll make you forget all your worries. Trey's got all the answers.
Right.
We can just follow these guys and find happiness at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah. I mean, I've made that comparison before, like how there's a lot of similarities in that, like in the you know, you're going to Trey's church, you know what I'm saying?
That's how I try to explain it to people, is that this is me going to church. I get that same feeling of community and connection with, and I've only brought one guy. I've brought a lot of people, but I only brought one dude who had a bad time.
Yeah.
And that's because someone died standing next to us. In all fairness, that's a bummer. Chicago 2010. We're at the, and me and my buddy Keith, who I've seen a lot of Phish shows with, we're having a good time grooving out. We brought his buddy Phil, and he's like, I don't get it. This is bad. And the guy standing next to us just starts shaking and falls down. Because naturally, I mean, are you gonna lie? Some people do drugs at these things. I'm not a fan. You know, I would never do such a thing. But some people tend to overindulge, and maybe they collapse and their head explodes. It's a casualty of war, though.
Yeah.
That's why you don't wear your nice clothes to a Phish show. Somebody's head might explode right next.
That'll happen.
And I've seen it happen. People go, you're full of shit. No, this guy's head popped open. And in all fairness, it was a pretty fat ghost. They were playing ghosts, and it was a good ghost. I was looking for somebody's head to explode. I knew it was coming. I go, this is a good ghost. Someone's gonna die. Cue the death right there, right next to us. Dude, I met a guy in London at an Umphrey's McGee show. And Umphrey's McGee is another jam band.
Yeah.
And they're like Phish, but they're not that good. I mean, they're fine, and they're cool guys. And they put on a good show. But in London, they're nobodies. And I've seen them before at a couple Bonnaroos, and they put on a good show. And they had cheap tickets, so I went to go see them. It was like me and 30 people. And, anytime you go to, like, a jam band show, you're going to meet quality people. You're going to meet some of the worst people you've ever met in your life, who are just shitty people trying to take advantage of everybody so they can stay on tour. And then you're going to meet the most quality, genuine, nice people you've ever met in your life. That's another part of the appeal. But I meet this guy named Matt in London. We have a good time. We watch the shows. We rage out, and we groove, we boogie. And then I'm in Denver on Labor Day weekend. I see the same guy. And it's like, even though we're not like close friends, anytime I meet somebody that's in that same cycle of the live music scene, you are friends because you're like, oh, we both got the same the same thing going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I've said too. It's like you go to these things and people are like, well, I don't want to go by myself. And it's like, well, it's easy to talk to people even if you're by yourself and things because... You know,
they're down to talk. They're ready to have a good time.
And you know you got something in common because you're at the same show. Like, yeah. So it's like, it's easy. Like, I've been to lots of shows by myself, and I get to talking to people. And like I said, like, then you start seeing them at the next show and stuff like that.
And they're your friend.
Yeah.
And they're usually, and like I said, quality people.
Yeah. Well, they got good taste.
So. Yeah, they do. I can't tell you. I've seen Fish by myself. I couldn't tell you how many times. I've seen Fish by myself a few times, but you're never by yourself for that long.
Sure.
Because the people you're standing around, you just get to talking, and you're like, oh, did you hear that tweezer from Thursday? And they're like, yes, I did. And then you just, you're friends.
Yeah.
You've got a whole well of things to draw from to provide good conversation.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, I've met all kinds of different people at these things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can meet, like, affluent, well-educated people, and you could meet the, you know, just people who do nothing but have good times. But it's more eclectic than you would think. The spread of people that go to they're not all just dirty wook hippies.
Yeah,
you know, it's a whole experience, man. And we will go see Fish one of these days. You know, every time they come to St. Louis, which is like once every 4 years, I have a new batch of like 9 people who I say we're gonna go, and then we all go, and they see it, and they go, that was just fine. And I go, well, do you want to go to Indiana, Wisconsin after this? They're like, no, I think that was enough. That was plenty.
So, you said you've been to London for a show, you've seen a show in there. But, like, where's the farthest you've been to see Fish?
To see Fish, specifically Fish?
Yeah.
That would be Miami
in
2009 for New Year's Eve. Fish got together, they kind of formed around 83, and they started playing regular shows and becoming a band around 87, and then they got their final setup at 89. These could all be wrong. This is my loose knowledge of the thing I spend the most time on. I think, and there's some guy right now who's going to hear this and go, this fucking idiot doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. These are all loose years. But anyways, they had toured really hard that entire time. That's how they got so good, is they just played so many live shows a year. You know, more than any other band. Like, full spring, summer, and fall tours, and winter tours. These guys did it nonstop. And then eventually, the lead guitarist had developed a drug problem, and it got pretty out of hand, and it eventually broke up the band. But before all that happened, they were on this trajectory, like, going up. And things were getting better, and then Jerry Garcia died in 95. All the Deadheads jumped on Fish Tourth, and they became this humongous band. And then from 95 to 2000, they built up to a New Year's Eve show in Florida. And this is called Big Cypress. And what I'm about to tell you is of the biggest Fish show of all time. The most legendary Fish show of all time. This is a band that did not get famous with any radio hits.
Right.
There's no single floating around, everybody boogies to the Fish single on the radio. They got everything they have entirely from word of mouth. That's all it was. People bring in their friends, and they developed this insane fan base. Yeah. And that peaked out. That whole momentum they had been building since they had started peaked out in 2000. The New Year's Eve from 1999 to 2000. They wanted to have a party that all their fans could come to and get in. So they had an outdoor festival in Florida at the Big Cypress Indian Reservation. And they played a normal show on the 30th, just a Fish show. And then on the 31st, they played a set, just a normal set. And then they started their second set at 11:30 at night, played till midnight, and then stopped playing at 8 a.m. the next morning. They played all night until the sun came up. And you imagine going to a concert and seeing a band play all night. Like, I'm sure you stayed up all night with a friend.
Yeah.
And you see the sun come up and you look at each other like, we did it, man. We had a real conversation. Yeah. Imagine doing that with you know, 60,000 of your friends.
Right.
You all stay up all night. And that was the big Fish peak. That was the epitome of Fishdom. The all-night show, which sounds like a nightmare to a lot of your listeners. I'm sure seeing any band who could see a band for that long.
Yeah.
But after that, they really felt like we've peaked. And then inevitably, it took about 2 years. The guitarist was like, we did it, I can't. And he got all fucked up on drugs. And they had their last concert in Coventry. It was in Vermont, which is where they're all from. They're not all from there. It's where the band started. And they had a festival to commemorate the Last Fish show. And he was all messed up on drugs for the festival. And you see videos online. I mean, he's like doing heroin on stage. And he's just like totally destroyed. He can't hardly play. It's an absolute disaster. And then they stopped. Fish died in Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
Now I start listening to Fish in 2005. And they're not a band right now. They're done. They threw in the towel. Kaputz. There'd never be a Fish show again. That's what everybody thought. Go back to about, again, these dates are all wrong. 1998. Fish has got a song called Fluffhead. It's about a 14-minute song. It's intensely difficult to play. But the song basically builds to this giant peak, and it's a fan favorite song. They stopped playing Fluffhead, and nobody knew why. Why aren't they playing Fluffhead? They just stopped playing Fluffhead. And then in 2003, before they broke up, everyone's like, "Oh, they're gonna do it tonight. They're gonna bring back Fluffhead." And they were cheering for it. They're like, "Come on, this is a festival. You guys are playing good, and we know you've been kind of iffy since Big Cypress. Come on, play." And the guitarist said, "Oh, no, we're not playing Fluffhead." He says, the bassist says no, which really means the guitarist says no. Cut to 2009. Fish gets back together. Nobody thought it could be done. All the naysayers were poo-pooing. Fish gets back together. Three nights, Hampton Coliseum in Virginia. Three nights. Tickets sell out in -4 minutes. That's better than any the Van Halen reunion didn't do that good. -4. They sold out 4 minutes before they went on sale. I tried to get tickets to that. There's no way. I couldn't get tickets to that. Are you kidding me? I'm not a lawyer, doctor, rocket scientist. I'm not getting tickets to that show.
You're not Brad Bradshaw?
No.
Doctor lawyers.
There's no way I could have. Cut to Hampton Coliseum. March 6, 2009. Fish gets on stage. And the crowd's going nuts. Nobody thought they'd see the Fish again. The Fish is back. And there they are in front of us. They walk out on stage. And the first song they play is Fluffhead. You imagine the poetry behind that? Oh my God, it's worthy of the greatest Hollywood movie! They open with the song they had been avoiding. And not only do they play it well. One of my favorite things to YouTube is that video. Because you can feel the electricity from the video in that room of people being at the first Fish show back in action.
Yeah.
You can feel it. And then when they start playing the opening notes to Fluffhead, the crowd doesn't just explode. Everybody is just losing their minds. Everybody who realized the significance of that moment is just crapping their pants. And everybody, and nobody's doing that. They're all just connected to the, and they played an hour and a 20 minute first set. That's how good the first set was. They started with that. We played a 3-day. And now I saw these set lists from Columbia, Missouri, where I lived. And I told my buddy Keith, who I was living with at the time, I said, we got to start seeing Fish. Because they're back. And they're not just back. They're Fluffhead back. Like, they're in it to win it. And he goes, I don't like Fish. I'm into death metal, and I'm an ugly guy. You know, I hope he hears this. He says, I'm Keith, and I'm the dumbest ugly guy, and I just like horror movies and big fake titties. That's all I like, Frank. I don't like Fish. I say, Keith, I will buy the ticket to your first show. I'll take you to a Fish show. And if you don't like it, we'll leave. Ah! Well, you'll leave. I mean, you'll get out of there. But if you like it, let's keep seeing them for as much as we can.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what we did for a source of income to keep seeing them, but we were just sucking all these dicks. We were just blowing these dudes. And there's a lot of dudes. There's no women at these things. So we go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Knoxville is like the 6th or 7th show on the tour, 2009 tour. They're back in action. We go to Knoxville. And my dad lives in Nashville, so it was convenient. It's about a 3-hour drive from there. We had a place to stay. He sees the Knoxville show. He has such a good time. We see 13 shows after that. We see 13 shows, and it was the best summer. I've had good summers. I've been a fortunate man. There's no summer in my mind that will ever beat. And the last shows we saw that year were in Miami for 2009. So about 40 minutes ago, you asked me what the longest distance was that I went to see a Phish show. And that was it. We drove to Miami, 22 hours, almost nonstop. We drove nonstop to Florida, and we saw Phish for 3 nights. And on New Year's Eve, they played 3 sets, and it was a magical time. Everybody danced all night long, and I will see Phish every day that I can. My friend asked me, he goes, "You're going to Vegas for Halloween?" He goes, "You know, Vegas is the biggest party city for Halloween. Why are you wasting your time at the Phish show?" I go, "You think I'm going to be in a state where Phish is playing and not be there? You think I'm not going to? Are you dumb? Phish is there. That's where the real party is. Those are the people I want to be around." Like I told you, this is chapter one of my opinion.
Like, I couldn't tell you a single Phish song besides Fluffhead now. But listening to how passionate you are about it, like, makes
there's got to be something there.
Makes me want to watch it. Like,
I mean, well, you know what, Shane, and I must congratulate you on getting married.
Oh well, thanks, man.
My sincere congratulations. Now I'm sure you had people at your wedding, and I know you did. I saw pictures.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, you know, you had people at your wedding. There must have been some guy at your wedding who went, I didn't get Shane a good gift. This is going to be the worst gift he got for his wedding. I'm really embarrassed. I am here to tell that guy, you're off the hook, because I got you a gift.
Oh, yeah.
For your wedding. So that guy did not get you the worst gift for your wedding, okay?
Okay.
I'm about to give you the worst gift you've gotten for your wedding, and it's right here. It's a burnt Phish CD I've been sitting on. Right here for you. Now, in retrospect, probably should have put the Fluffhead on here. I really sold the shit out of that song, all right? There's nowhere to be on here. In retrospect, probably should have opened with Fluffhead.
Yeah. My mind would have exploded on track one, man.
No, I don't even think you're allowed to burn that to a CD.
Yeah.
But this is for you.
Oh, thank you.
It is a collection of bass starter level Phish songs. Phish 101. Nothing to blow your mind too hard, you know.
Just customized.
A nice... Yes, I did write that. Well, I'm not just going to write Phish with a black marker. What am I like?
Multicolored block letters.
If I had more time, because I had to come here, and I didn't want to be too late, I would have dazzled that with every Sharpie I had because of the monumentalness.
Yeah.
Of giving you your first Phish CD. Now, I've given a lot of people their first Phish CD. Most of the time, end up scratched on the floor of the car. That's where they die. But I must insist that you at least open your mind and heart.
Hey, I'm always about trying new music. And
well, that is the only new music you'll ever need. If I can get you addicted to this band, they've got enough music to give you the whole rest of your life. You'll never need another band again. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's like I'm trying to sell you on going to my church.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, listen, I got a pamphlet here. I want you to read this. We shake hands beforehand. We got to welcome the new guys. It makes you feel real comfortable.
Right.
But then you got to give money. We give money at the merch table. You get a t-shirt. You get a tour t-shirt.
Sure.
Sometimes you get a patch. They also sell little coins. This band is the master of merch.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because they know how fanatical people are. So, like, they'll have a poster of each show. Not just a poster of that tour with all the dates. Individual posters for each individual show.
Yeah.
I mean,
I like that. There's a few bands I know that they do a whole different poster for each show, and it's fun to collect those, like, as a fan, you know, especially a fanatical fan like yourself.
Oh, just putting it lightly.
Yeah. So
you see my bedroom, it's just different. And it's not even just my bedroom, my living room, it's just different show posters. Right. It's really creepy if you're a normal person. Like, if you're, like, just an average Joe and you see that, you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. What happened to you? Your dad hit you over the head with a guitar too many times?
Right.
What happened? Don't you? Shane, I told you, they always end up on the floor.
I'm putting it there for safekeeping.
Oh, my God.
I don't want something bad to happen to it.
I will be mortified if something bad. I actually put some thought into that one.
Yeah.
Like, not enough thought, though. I should have probably put Fluffette on there.
You dropped the ball on that one, buddy.
But you know what? Let me tell you this. This is just the beginning of a beautiful friendship of me giving you Phish CDs. There are times where I will just make Phish CDs and go, well, I don't need... I'm just going to give this to somebody else and go, please, dear God, listen to this. This is a good CD. There's a Sneaking Sally on here that'll make you pee while you're driving. Come on. It's 47 minutes long. And that's the thing. A lot of people tune out because they tend to jam on and it doesn't always go somewhere. Yeah. Sometimes it's just them like, nah, it's not happening.
I think that's what's happened to this show. I think people would...
How dare you. How dare you. I know at least one guy who will listen to this with great intense fervor. With this guy, me. I'll re-listen to myself retelling the great tales of fish. By the way, does this have anything to do with me, this show? Because it hasn't so far. And I like that. I'd much rather talk about fish than myself.
We like to keep it that way. We like to...
Oh, my goodness. How we must be 3 hours in by now.
I think so, yeah. Roughly, yeah. 3 hour mark.
Okay, good. All right, guys. This is the second chapter of Fishdom, back when they got back together. Now, this is a strange time. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do it. I could. Don't you challenge me. I can do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Oh, man.
I guarantee you there's no guy who loves Humphreys McGee this much. There's no guy. There's no kid who's on a podcast talking about Dave Matthews.
Right.
You know, he might just say, Crash was a pretty good album.
That's the whole show.
It's pretty good. I mean, I liked it.
I don't know, man. I tell you, I can't think of anything that I'm... and you know that I like as much as you like.
Dude,
like,
I check their stats.
Yeah,
I got apps. If I'm at a show and they play a song that they haven't played in a while, I will consult the app and see how many shows. I mean, that's bad.
Right.
But I've got that quality about me, man. I like nerding over stuff. Yeah. You know, before it was fish, it was Pokemon. You know, it's just I find stuff and I get into it. Yeah, except for stand-up. I've never really gotten that deep into that. I've never given enough of a shit to care about that this much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's sick, because I think about, man, if I ever win the Powerball, you know how many fish shows I go to? Like, that's the end of it. It's not my yacht and my house on the coast. Nah, dude, we're doing a whole tour, and we're getting posters of every show. And I just gotta buy a warehouse to frame all these and just walk in it and sit down and be quiet when their fish isn't playing a show.
Oh, man.
I challenge you to find somebody else who likes anything this much.
Yeah, that is a challenge.
Yeah, I think so. I would say so.
I would argue that I love music that much, but not a particular band. Like, I'm always got music going.
I do love other music. There are other bands and there are other songs that I love. You know, I was real into Pink Floyd. It's just, it's what scratches my itch.
Yeah.
You know, and there'll be times where I go, you know, almost whole days without listening to fish. Almost entire days. But then I'll go back.
Yeah.
But, I love a lot of different types of music. Right. But a lot of the stuff I really love, I can't go see those bands. They're not bands anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just, and even if they are bands now, they're not playing like they used to.
Sure.
You know, and fish is not playing like they used to, but still what they're doing is great.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even before I liked music, I always thought the idea of going to a concert seemed really cool. It was weird.
Yeah.
When I was a real young kid, I always thought, like, man, it must be so cool to see live music.
So what was the first one then?
My first concert was The Urge.
The Urge, nice.
Dude, that was a killer show, man. They're amazing. I really liked The Urge, and I was 15. And my sister and my cousins talked to my mom into letting me go. I had a killer good time. I've seen so many good shows at the Pageant, man.
Yeah.
That's where it was.
If you're listening and are still listening,
they are listening with great intent, I can assure you.
The Urge is playing Saturday night at Taste of St. Louis in Chesterfield, Missouri.
Nice.
So, yeah, we've had Steve on here as a guest.
I know, I've seen that.
So, he's a good friend of mine now, and it's fun, but, yeah. My first, that's a lot cooler than mine, but I still...
Who'd you see?
My first one, even though it's still, I'm not, like, ashamed, but the first one I remember picking to go to was Matchbox 20, Soul Asylum, and Semisonic.
On purpose?
Yeah.
Ugh. Bah!
Bah! I mean, they're no fish, but, you know.
Of course, but who is?
Yeah.
The fish isn't even fish anymore.
But no, I mean, it was a great, I love that.
It was a good experience. It got you hooked on music. I mean, you're totally hooked on the live experience. You're out all the time seeing live shows.
Yeah, and I am hooked on the, intimate live shows, the small clubs experience, and that, I don't know, I can't...
Something gets lost in the big,
big venues. I see some of, like, sometimes you post pictures, and, like, all you see is, like, a light way down there, and I'm like, you have these...
That's big them! Yeah. That's them in that light, I promise!
And it's like, for me, like, I just went to Lou Fest over...
How was that?
It was cool. I mean, like, I had a good time. It
looked packed, man.
I mean, it was a good crowd, like, especially the main stage stuff, like, when Outkast went on and stuff. There was a ton of people there.
Yeah.
But, like, some of the bands that I like, I was, like, right up against the fence for them, and, like, you know, there wasn't a, like, a huge crowd there around something, but there's, you know, four stages going on at the same time, so. So, I don't know, like, for me, that was, like, probably the first festival, you know, proper festival where there's multiple stages going on different sides of the park and all that, so.
It's a different atmosphere to festival.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but I prefer my small
I totally clubs. Agree with you.
And then, so.
There's something that happens at outdoor festivals.
Yeah.
Where it gives the audience this kind of feeling where if we tune out for any amount of time, we can just get up and leave. And it creates a different atmosphere for the band.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, because there's so much shuffling and moving around. It's not the same. Right. I mean, there is something cool about being there with so many people, but something is lost in that experience.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like those are kind of more about the... people, you know, it's more you make these connections with people and you're hanging out and you're whatever the bond between people, but like it's not necessarily about the music anymore. It's, you know, it's about the experience of being there at the festivals and stuff with the people. And so I don't know why I like where the music's the star of the show and
it's the main focus.
Yeah. Because I mean, there is, like I said, you're walking around through the festival. And you got people out there playing, you know, frisbee and hacky sack or whatever, and all this different stuff. It's like there's all this stuff going on that they could care less that there's live music being played, and it's like they just are at the festival, and it's like, you know, so like you go to, I mean, it happens at other concerts where people are talking the whole time, and it's like, why did you pay $20 to get in the door?
So you could get your Facebook picture and say you were at the show. You know, it's, look at my social life.
Yeah, right. But I love just, you know, being right up front and then, like, just taking all it in and then afterwards, you know, being able to hang out and meet these people. Like, you don't...
That is always fun.
Yeah, so...
And you don't always get to do that.
Right.
But if you get to... I got to meet the Offspring.
Oh, yeah?
By lying and cheating and stealing. They're at the... what was it? It was Warped Tour 05. There's this giant line going around Riverport, and you know how it's that, you know, horseshoe shape that goes around. There's a line going all the way to the back, and I'm a mean, shitty kid. Still am. But, like, I walk to the front of the line to see what all the hubbub is about, and it's the Offspring live signing. And the liaison goes, "Who's next?" I said, "Me." And this woman goes, "He is not next. He just walked up here out of nowhere." And I said, we got in a fight in line, and she said she'd get me kicked out right before I got to the front. I just shot that out of the can so quick. And the guy goes, "Well, get over here." And I looked at her, I was like, So I get up, and I got a Pink Floyd shirt on, because, you know, I don't belong there. And they're like, "Oh, I love Pink Floyd." I was like, "Oh, yeah, you know, I like Pink Floyd. How about that?" Get all my stuff signed and say hi. Later on in the day, I tell my friends, "Oh, look at this. I got the Offspring stuff signed." And they're like, "Oh, so you should get us to get something signed by the Offspring." I go, "It's done. You know, there's no way." And they're like, "Oh, well, whatever." So I'm walking around by myself, and I run out with my friends, and they're like, "Oh, look, the Offspring's back there in a tent." And there's like a rope, and then about 20 feet, and then a tent. And the Offspring's in there doing radio with the point or whatever, radio station. And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." So I just undo the rope and I start walking in. So I goes, "Hey, you can't go in there." I looked at him. I just said, "No, it's cool." And he goes, "All right." And then I just kept going. I sat down in the little tent with like 10 other people who were just like press or whatever. And I just sat down, watched the interview. And then I went up to him and was like, "Hey, can I get this stuff signed?" They're like, "Yeah, sure. No problem. Pink Floyd, we remember you." That's the only time confidence has ever done anything for me in my whole life, was just looking at that guy who's like, "Hey, buddy, you better slow down there, champ." And I just said, "No, don't worry about it." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I guess."
Okay. Yeah.
This is a great concert experience, though.
Yeah.
But I'm not much into punk music, and that's Warped Tour, so, you know.
I saw Offspring at Soldier Memorial, like, a little bit ago, and a couple years ago, whatever. But it was all right. I don't know.
I like them, man. Yeah. They got, it, like I said, but it's not my favorite genre of music.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy their live show, you know.
It was, you played, Dexter played Heaven on piano and stuff. Like, yeah. That was pretty neat.
Moment. Heaven?
Heaven's So Far Away or whatever.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, I'm finding it hard to believe this is heaven.
I think that's the name of the song, isn't it? Heaven So Far Away?
I
believe so.
I don't know.
Wikipedia that.
Can we just edit this so all the references fit? Yeah. I am mortified that I might have said the wrong date for the wrong fish year.
Don't worry, we got.
You realize the ridicule that I'm facing right now?
We got people to take care of that.
I hope so.
We'll have my system do that.
Because I cannot live in a world where I go to a fish show and they go, "You that asshole who said 89 when it was 88. And I'll just put my hands in my face and I'll cry and I will leave the fish show. I can't live in that world, man. Yeah. I cannot do it. I can't do it. It's weird that all of my obsessions start with P. I realized that today.
Oh, yeah?
Pokemon. Fish. Pink Floyd. Penis. You see, I've been working on that all day, and I thought, man, am I going to sneak that one in every conversation for the next 8 months? Isn't that, was that worth it?
Yeah.
I thought it was worth it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I had made myself laugh with that for hours today. Because why would I like penis? Because it's great.
You're a weird guy.
Am I a weird guy? I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think any normal person can love four guys that much. Is that really? Can any guy love four dudes that much? I love these four guys so much.
Right.
I saw one show, I was sitting next to the guy's kids, the drummer's kids. We were in St. Louis in the front row, and they all got kids, but the drummer's kids came in to watch some of the show, and I was standing next to him, I was like, oh my god, that's his kids. And they're like, dude, don't get so excited when you see someone's kids. Like, you don't even know these kids. And I saw his wife, and I go, hey, I'm just saying hi to the kids. She goes, yeah, you can say hi. I said, hey, how you guys doing? I said, your dad's the coolest dude ever. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, we know. So many dirty, sweaty dudes tell us our dad's great. It gets sickening.
Yeah. The only one I can think of is, like, I see Devin Allman every now and then when he's in town and stuff.
No shit.
Yeah. And his kid, since he lives here in St. Louis area, so his kid comes to some of his shows. And the same kind of, I mean, not that I ran up to him and I'm like, got excited to see him, but like I'd recognize him. I'm like, oh, hey, there's Devin's kid, and it's like it is kind of cool the fact that like
you realize what your dad does.
Your dad's a rock star, man, and like it's cool. Like, so
what was the time you were the most starstruck? Who was it? Who'd you meet and you were like, oh, this is the real deal?
Yeah,
because you meet guys.
I meet a lot of people, and I mean it's always exciting. I try not to. I found out that like you can't freak out, like, because
that's a bad thing.
Yeah,
I've learned
like,
that.
Like, I've met these people, and if you're cool, like, they're, that's the thing, like, you treat them like normal people, like, because they are, like, and I try not to, blow up, like, and go super fanboy and stuff, but, like, it is exciting, but I don't know, I couldn't tell you, like, the one that really, but for me, like, now, like I mentioned, Steve Ewing, like, for me, that is real, like,
is really cool.
To have a personal relationship now, like, where I've become friends with Steve, and, like, where, growing up,
you listen to his music.
Yeah, it's like, and same thing, with Devin Allman, we've become friends, and it's just, it's fun to have, like I said, develop that, take it from fan to friend,
kind of surreal.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's like, wow, it's like, I bought all these guys' CDs. Now we're hanging out talking, and it's like, it's kind of strange. And
it is.
But,
dude, getting to work at the Funny Bone and getting to actually hang out with some of the people who you see on TV, you're like, this is surreal.
Yeah.
And it's always cool, but I never have ever been like, that's that's God.
Yeah.
Except for the time I met one of the guys from Fish.
Oh, yeah?
Can I tell 14 more Fish stories? Can I?
It's your show, man. We can talk whenever.
Can we do 3 hours?
Yeah.
This is a long story. Okay. I'm a young child. I'm going to start back then. That's all my Fish stories start with. This is where the story is, and it could be 2 minutes, but I got to tell you everything that leads up to that moment. But no, I get to meet the bassist from Fish.
Yeah.
After a show at the pageant. They all have solo projects. Two of them aren't so good. But the bassist, his solo projects is very, very cool. And I got to see him front row. And if you're asking what I do at a Fish show, it's this. Like, I'm grooving. I'm wiggling and I'm shaking. I look like a complete idiot. And I'm doing that in the front row for the whole mic show. And I'm into it. And afterwards, he goes back to the merch table after the show to sign LPs and shirts and stuff. And he sees me and recognizes me from the show because of my enthusiasm for the show. It's kind of like if like you have a restraining order and you see that person and you're like, oh, God, there they are. I hope they don't get closer.
Yeah.
And I got this wide look in my eyes. I said, oh, God, there he is. That's Jesus. That's the living Lord right there in front of me. Like, I want to, like, walk up to him on my knees and, like, with my head down, like, oh, Jeff, please forgive me. For I am not worthy of this moment of beauty.
Right.
But I get up to him, and you can see it in my eyes. Like, I'm a ridiculous fan. Like, ridiculous. And yeah. I go, and I get my album signed. I go, can I have a picture with you? Like, in my most sincere, like, oh, my God, I must remember this. And he goes, I can't really take pictures with fans. And that's fine. You know, he goes, people take pictures with me. They sell stuff on eBay. And they go, you know, see, I met him.
Yeah.
Understandable. I said, well, can I just take a picture of you without me in it? To remember this moment forever? He goes, yeah, no, I don't think that's kosher. I can't. He's a Jew. You know, he said, I can't.
He's a Jew.
He says, I can't let you do that. And so I stop and I go, will you take a picture of me? And he goes, well, yeah, I can take a picture of you. So I give him my camera and he takes a picture just real willy-nilly. And he looks at it and he goes, it's very blurry, but since I took it, it is artistic. And he gives it back to me. So I have this picture
that
the bassist of Fish took to me. And now I can die happy because I had a moment with one of them. The most accessible one, albeit. Some of them live very private lives. Can't get their addresses. I'm working on it. Well, yeah, that was it. That was the one. I met Seth MacFarlane. And he's real cool. Big guy. Family Guy's amazing. I don't give a shit. I met the bassist of Fish. That's it. That's the end all sale.
How'd you get to meet him? Seth MacFarlane.
He's at Wash U. And he did a lecture for the Wash U students, of which I was not. Needless to say, there was not a time in my life where I was in Wash U studying brains, but I heard about this lecture through the grapevine, and me and three of my friends all went, and we walked in, posing as students. There was no security check, so we just went in, and he did this whole thing. He showed an episode from an upcoming season that hadn't aired. He did questions and answers, and he was hilarious, and then afterwards he met everybody.
Yeah,
I got my Family Guy DVD signed. I don't even have that framed in my house, and I should somewhere. There's all these Fish posters, man. I got no room for my Family Guy DVDs. Yeah. I got signed by Seth before. I got no room. I got too many Fish posters.
Yeah. Another really neat experience. I got to meet Jim Gaffigan.
No shit.
Yeah. He did a book sign tour, and he did a small... like a room, I don't know, forget what the name of the place was.
Where do you do it here?
I forget the name of the place. It was like in like Ladue area. There was a little sort of, I don't know, kind of theater room. It wasn't even really a theater. I forget. But anyway, little place with seats and then stage, and KDHX recorded it. Oh, and I believe it was KDHX. We'll take care of this in editing.
Yeah.
And but he so he did a half an hour interview, and you know, with a live audience, and And then he did a, you know, anybody that bought a copy of the book got it signed, and obviously they kind of pushed us through pretty quickly because everybody
wanted. Yeah, everybody wanted to sit and talk for 10 minutes, and he can't do that.
I end up kind of hanging out in the parking lot afterwards, and I got a picture with him by his bus. His dad is fat. Tour bus and
no stuff. Kidding.
Yeah, so
dude, he seems like he'd be a cool guy.
Yeah, he's you know, very nice and you know, just a genuine guy, and like so it was really cool, like, to have a moment with, you know, to say hey.
That's
and,
awesome.
That was a pretty big deal.
That's so cool to have these moments with people that, like, you see all the time on the TV, and you hear their CDs all the time, and you get to meet them, and you're like, oh my god, you're real,
right?
You're like an actual person.
Yeah, but there's I try to get out and do those things, like, when anytime I hear about it, like, but I think if there's one, like, I feel like I missed an opportunity, but I went to America's Got Talent taping,
and I'm jealous, dude. I love that show. Oh, who'd you get to meet?
Oh, well, I didn't get to meet anybody, but I went there with hope to meet.
What year was this?
This was I don't know. Howard Stern was who I wanted to meet. So he had just started on the show, and they were recording in St. Louis. I guess it was maybe a year or something, a year and a half ago now, something like that. So I guess this is the second season on the show. But they record, you know, like 6 months before the show airs. So anyway, it's about a year and a half. So anyway, but I went down there trying to hopefully meet Howard, because I'm a big Howard fan.
Dude, that guy doesn't seem accessible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think they're a little bit, but, like, because I don't think he's, like, too big where he's, like, you know, afraid to meet fans kind of thing or whatever he's got. But, like, there are his fans are fanatics. And, like,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Anytime you got fans that are, like, they look at you like, oh, I just want to wear your skin.
Yeah, right.
Like, then you got to have people, you know.
But that for me, that would be pretty neat, because, like, I've been listening to his show for a long time.
He's been big for so long.
Yeah.
It shocked me so hard when I heard he was going to America's Got Talent. I was like, the guy?
It's kind of weird, but if you listen to his show, he's a giant fan for those shows. Like, legitimately.
He loves it.
He loves
it. And you know what he does? I will say, how often do you disagree with his assessment of people's talent?
Well, yeah, and he's very good at the judging, like, on the show. Like, he tells it how it is, and it's... you know, he's accurate. Like, he doesn't...
He actually makes the show watchable.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan was not cutting it.
No.
He doesn't even cut it on his own show.
Yeah.
Who the fuck gave that guy a job?
I have no idea.
Piers, I'm calling you out right now.
Yeah, there we go. We just ruined it for getting Piers on the show.
I'm sorry, Piers. I apologize so deeply, and I think you're beautiful. You're a gorgeous man.
But, yeah, I mean, I enjoy watching Howard on the show, and then I love listen to his radio show, and I've read the books and the movie.
Do you watch Penn and Teller Fool Us? Mm-mm. Oh, no. You got to start watching Fool Us. America's Got Talent for magicians.
Yeah.
It's just magicians, but instead of having a panel of judges, it's just Penn and Teller, and if they know how you did your trick, you're off.
Yeah.
If they don't know how you did your trick, you get to open for a show in Vegas. And it's great, because some of these magicians pull out their best tricks, and they're like, oh, Penn and Teller won't know how to do this, but Teller is like, he's got a private library of every magic book in the history of time. And they had a guy who did a trick that they used to do back in ancient Egypt, and Teller's like, oh, I know this one. It's an old ancient Egyptian trick. It's a fascinating show, if you like those types of things. I'd definitely check it out.
What's that on? What channel?
Well, it's, I think it's just Come to America. It used to just be exclusively on the UK. You can watch it on YouTube. But we don't have to put this in the podcast. I'm plugging something I'm not making any money from. They should give it if this gets the views up, because how dare they?
Does he actually talk in the show, or is he...
No, he talks to Penn.
Yeah.
And then if he thinks he knows how you did your trick, he'll draw on a notepad. And he'll show them, and they'll go, all right, you know.
What, that's just funny that he keeps that...
He keeps that facade up, man, still to this day. And they've been famous for, like, what, 30, 40 years?
Right.
And he still won't talk?
Yeah.
I think they did SNL, and he still wouldn't talk.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I love those guys, man. Penn and Teller are great.
Yeah, they're... Yeah. So what, you guys ever going to do any more of those Brooklyn Guys videos?
Never.
Never?
I wish.
That's it?
You know, I'll tell you what it is. Really, we did a couple. We did one, and I loved it, and I thought it was great. Then we did two more, and they were just, you know, it was what it was. And I didn't want to keep doing it for the sake of doing it. I only wanted to do it if we had a top-notch idea, and neither of us are willing to put in the work to craft out a top-notch idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got ideas for bits I want to do, sketches and stuff, that are outside of the Brooklyn Guys, but if we ever have an idea that we can have that is brilliant without having to work for it, then we will do it. But we're not about to put effort into
it. Yeah.
No. Fish is going on a fall tour. How am I supposed to...
I got priorities, man.
Yeah.
I enjoy those. Like, I just... funny to me, like, the... You guys become these characters and everything. And
see, that's... And Charlie and I were talking about... I wanted him to come on here.
Yeah.
And do the character, and just do the thing in character, because I thought that'd be great. He goes, well, you gotta be in character. I go, my character is just facial expressions.
Right.
My character is not like a guy, he's just a bunch of double chins.
Yeah.
That's all it is. How can I do that on a podcast?
Right.
But, no, it's, I mean, we're both very happy with the first one.
Yeah.
And the other two are good. I mean, his brother is a genius. Charlie's brother, John, he's a fucking miracle worker when it comes to putting stuff together.
Okay, so he edited and recorded stuff?
He is a one-man army. Everything we've ever done, it's just him, and yeah. He does a phenomenal job. And not just for being one guy. For a whole team of people, he does a phenomenal job. And he's a very, very cool guy to hang out with. He's a great dude. But, you know, Charlie's in this relationship right now. He's got this girl he's dating. We gotta cut all this out of the podcast. I'll tell you the truth. We gotta turn these mics off. I'll tell you what's fucking wrong with that guy.
Well, I feel like they're, as a fan, I've been watching you guys, and I feel like there's a new wave of, you know, younger comics coming up.
They definitely are, man. And there are some of them are funny, man.
Yeah.
Some of them.
But like, you know, yourself, Andrew Frank, I'm a big fan of, Bobby Jaycox, who we've had on the show, Charlie, and, you know, it's just, I feel like there was a couple of years ago when, like, we had, you know, Gabe Kia and Nikki Glaser. And
that was a long time ago, man. It was like 5-7 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there was that kind of a generation, then there was, and then now I feel like we have another solid group of young comics coming up through town, and I don't know, it's exciting for me to watch you guys and hoping that you know, some big things happen.
Well, I mean, we all hope for nothing but fame, money, and whores. I mean, that's all any comic, and maybe a whole bunch of blow, but you know, it's just real humble of us to be.
who's the biggest your whoop. Your most exciting one you've got to share the stage with,
fame wise
for you, yeah. Like,
that's a tough question.
I have seen Charlie Winfrey open for Sean Patton, and actually feature for Sean.
Yeah,
over the weekend, and
I had never even heard of Sean Patton before this weekend. Really?
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of comedy though. Like, I love what I do, but I do not like Ben Johnson is a kid who goes out there and gets everybody's new CD and he listens to him. Like, I'm very specific in the comedy I like. Like, I'll find one guy and I'll listen to all of their stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not like out there constantly looking for it.
As I am into music, I love comedy too. So I'm always out there.
I know, dude. Like I said, dude, you're out. I see you so often in the live entertainment genre because you really love it. You genuinely have a passion for it.
Along with being a fan and, but now I got this, and it's like, well, now I got to hustle even more because I got to...
You're in the right place, though. You know how many of these people would be willing to just... I mean, you go to a show, and they're like, hey, can I just get some of your time?
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been trying to do. Like, we've recorded one, like a little mini episode. I met my friend Patrick Sweeney. He's a killer guitar player. We hung out in Colombia for, about 20 minutes. Got a little interview in the green room, and you know, and that's the thing, like, too, that what this podcast kind of set up is where we can take it on the road and we can we can record anywhere, and you know, so it's a lot of fun being connected and being able to, you know, like I said, have these friendships and relationships with these guys where you know, it's not just some guy. They actually know who I am because I've been following them around for quite a while and stuff. So, but yeah, it's fun, man. I'm enjoying it.
And I'm happy you enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I talking comedy and music all the time, I can handle that. I just get somebody to pay me to do it. That's the
get
trick.
A sponsor.
Well, we're working on that. We do have a one sponsor. I mean, it's not like I'm rolling in the dough yet, but we
do the plug. I want to hear you do your plug.
We got it pre-recorded. We'll take care of that.
Oh my god! I don't even get to hear the plug.
Yeah, but
who's the sponsor?
Our friend Allison Barr. She has her own insurance agency, and so she sponsors us.
Oh my god! So. I can't do. I got a good radio voice. Oh, if you need somebody to do a pre-recorded plug.
See how easy that was for me, and then that homeless guy who got all that attention for having a good radio voice. All
right,
I've had a good radio voice for years. I can talk like this on command. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the one I practice on the most. Yeah. I figured that would be.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
Children of all ages, the Barnum and Bailey Circus for clearly perverts now. Who's going to a circus?
Michael Buffer, right?
I have no idea.
He's Ready to Rumble?
I have no idea. You know how many sports I watch?
Well,
not even boxing.
But like he's like trademarked that Ready to Rumble thing, and like now, like I guess like his brother Bruce or something's been doing it. Like so when he can't be at the boxing match, or then
his brother
does it too. Now they're the only two that I guess can say it by trademark and stuff. And
that's a ridiculous thing to trademark.
Yeah, well, I mean he's making a lot of money off of this.
Yes, he is. What a stupid thing to make your money off of. You have a nice champagne. You know what paid for this?
Yeah. Well, I was like, I think Paris Hilton tried to trademark like "That's Hot" or something like that, and it's like, how the hell does that work? Like, you can't trademark that. Like,
yeah, every time a kid's about to touch a stove, and mom has to explain why not. Paris Hilton gets 25 cents.
Yeah, man.
You believe that? What a dumb, ugly girl. Yeah, you're not getting Paris on the podcast either.
Damn it.
I had so much fun. How much time have we done? 4.5?
I think we're going on day 2 now.
Day 2? All right, a couple more fish stories.
Yeah.
From the road. No, I couldn't possibly do any more fish stories without getting into serious legal trouble.
Oh, yeah.
No.
That'll happen, too. The government is monitoring everything.
So. I know. And, you know, why are we putting all of our stuff out there on Facebook? I'm worried about the invasion of privacy. Right. I just don't want them to see what I'm Googling late at night. That's all I don't want. Can we have, is there any way we can lobby for a bill where it's called the hour of Google and from 3 to 4, 4:05, you give a little extra time in case you got a slow connection. Nobody can find out what you're Googling. Can we just have a period?
It's like the purge, you know?
Purge. The whatever you want to Google purge.
Yeah.
Once a year, we have 1 hour where you can Google all those things you're too embarrassed to Google.
Right.
And you're allowed to do it. No holds barred. And I know a lot of people are going, that's a terrible idea. You can Google some horrendous shit. Yeah, but you get to too.
Yeah.
Everybody gets the Google day. The Google day. And it's,
I think you're onto something here, Frank.
I think I got nothing but good ideas, but nobody else does, so, you know, whatever. I just sit here with my good fucking ideas and fuck off, I guess. My hour of uncensored Googling.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, you want to wrap this thing up?
Yeah.
I think we
got it. And I'm so worried, you know, I've got more anxiety in my life right now about getting fish dates wrong.
Well, hopefully nobody's fact-checking this podcast, because we just make a lot of this shit up, so...
I hope so.
Yeah.
Just change my name if everything I said is wrong.
Yeah, we will. For, you know...
Just Tommy Hot Pockets.
Tommy Hot Pockets.
That's
there
my,
it is.
That's my alter ego when I've been fucking up interviews. Just said, this is Tommy Hot Pocket. You can Google on the Google Hour all the worst of Tommy Hot Pocket interviews. You asked me earlier how many podcasts I've been on. 86. Frankie Chubb has been on 4. Tommy Hot Pockets, 80 math. Whatever the... Tommy Hot Pockets is not good at math. That's one of his things.
All right. That's a character you're working on, huh?
Tommy Hot Pockets. Yeah. It's me when I'm too ashamed of how dumb I am.
All right. Well, my guest this week's been Frankie Chubb. You can find him at any of the fish shows.
Yes. And around. I do have plugs, okay. By the way.
Go ahead, man.
Can I do all my plugs?
Anybody that's still listening to this?
How did you? Are you this pessimistic?
No, wait, what'd I say?
You said if you're still listening to this, of course they're still listening to this. We've provided nothing but quality free entertainment.
For 3.5 days.
Bullshit, we've only got 2.5. Oh. Come on, I know how much time I've been awake. Tommy Hot Pockets knows everything. I gotta check my... plugs, and here I am telling you I got plugs, and now I gotta look at the dates to check the plugs, but I do have plugs. Thank you. I do, just as soon as I find this text. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you've enjoyed Frankie Chubb on this Rock Paper Podcast, you can catch him Monday, November 17th at 9:30 p.m. at the Tivoli. A movie he was in called The Impersonators will be making its St. Louis debut. Actually, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that. That might be a private thing. Try to go. Sneak in. You know, if somebody tells you that you can't get in, just say, don't worry about it, it's all right.
Hey, Tommy Hot Pocket sent me.
Tommy Hot Pocket says this was the place to be. That's it. My one plug. I hope I did it right. I probably did it wrong. Just fact check that, too.
All
right.
We'll be sure to search that on our Purge Hour.
On our Google Uncensored Hour of Shame. You can just look up all that stuff you didn't, and there's no proof. Yeah. Your wife cannot check what you Google. Nobody can. It's just you and the internet and a glass of red wine. What do you want to see? Doesn't matter. When you see a gorilla fuck a zebra, you can do it one day a year for a whole hour. For a whole hour, you can watch videos of gorillas fucking zebras. And then an ALS Ice Bucket Challenge from 5 years ago. You watch a gorilla fucking a zebra while doing the ALS Bucket Challenge. Whatever your Google Purge Hour is, man, you just sit there with your hand in your pants and Google away. That's it. It's your time to shine.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Shane. I really, for real, thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much. I'm sorry I was just my same awful self.
Hey, I wouldn't have any other way, man.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Frank. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.